Welcome to the Nerds Podcast number 179. Guys, hey guys, we have lots of live dates coming up, so come see us do a podcast live, like Philadelphia on the 23rd, and Atlanta on the 24th of March, and the Minneapolis on March 30th twice. And then April, we're doing Madison, Wisconsin, Chicago, Illinois, Iowa City, Iowa, tons of dates. Go to Nerdist.com/calendar to see all those. Or if you want to sign up for a daily Nerdist News email, you can get NerdistNews.com is the place to do that. So it's not irritating stuff every day in your inbox, I promise. It'll be stuff that you will go, oh, I'm glad. Thank you for telling me. You know, like when someone has like a bat in the cave, like right in their nose, and you're like, hey, there's a bug right there. And like, why are you telling me that? And you're like, because I'm your friend. That's why I'm telling you that. Because no one else fucking cares enough about you to tell you that you look ridiculous right now. Like, we are your friend. That was a real stretch of a metaphor. But anyway, here we are. I'd like to thank Stamps.com, a returning sponsor of the Nerdist Podcast. If you're running a small business, Stamps.com is absolutely the way to go. Never leave your house again to mail letters. You might have to venture out and get food. Stamps.com is an amazing-to-use, easy interface. Any internet connection, you can go on, print out your postage on any size package, and then you just leave it for the postman. He'll pick it up, and then that's it. And then you're done. Don't stand in line at the post office. Don't start stewing about how much everything sucks because you're standing in line at the post office. Do it all from home. Right now, Stamps.com has a special offer for Nerdist listeners. No risk trial. $110 bonus offer, including a digital scale and $55 of free postage, but only if you use the promo code Nerdist. So, please, I beg you, go to Stamps.com. Before you do anything else, click the radio microphone at the top of the homepage. Type in Nerdist. If you don't know what that is, then you're very unaware because you're listening to the podcast right now. That is Stamps.com. Enter the promo code Nerdist. Thank you so much to Stamps.com for keeping this rickety boat afloat yet another week. And now, this episode of the Nerdist Podcast, Tim and Eric have a movie. Tim and Eric's billion-dollar movie is out, and you should watch it because it's Tim and Eric. And we got them to come in on the podcast, which was super fun because Tim and Eric don't really do a lot of interviewee, chatty kind of stuff. And so it was really fun to just sit down and talk to them. I met them a million times, but never had a long conversation with them. So this was as much of a treat for me as I hope it is for you. The Nerdist Podcast number 179 with Tim E. Eric.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Hey, Jonas, save it for the air.
I tell them that constantly.
If you're gonna get into a riff on music, I mean,
they come in already riffing on stuff, and I'm like, shut up, tell your story on the thing.
But sometimes we just like to live our life.
Outside the confines of a podcast.
No,
we can't do that.
You cannot live your life off a recorded instrument, Jonah. Then it's not real.
You're right.
Then it doesn't exist. How would you prove that your conversation exists unless
podcast
you could...
Podcast or it didn't happen.
Yeah. But that just what you were talking about with kids. I was just in Oakland and there was this huge line outside the Fox Theater for some name I didn't recognize. And they're like, oh, this kid's a DJ. He's like 19.
Skrillex?
No, but he's a disciple of that guy.
Oh my God.
So what, then that other kid's 12 then? Or?
Yeah. It's just the R gang of DJs. Tim and Eric, thank you for coming to the Nerdist Podcast. It's not really our studio.
It's nice.
It's nice-ish.
We've recorded 100 and at least 30 episodes.
You really can't hear anything you're saying.
This is terrible. I gotta do this and then this. We used to have another mic and that broke.
Do you guys want to gang
up
there?
Guys, we're just enjoying the experience. The gear in the room don't really matter.
That's gotta come up
to us.
We don't have headphones, so we can't comment on how the sound sounds.
I should give you... Someone took all the headphones.
I will make a comment. Someone has bad breath on this side of the table. I don't know who.
I'm going to say probably Jonah, because he's sitting closest to you.
Probably.
He was just drinking iced coffee.
I'll just do a check to make sure.
Look, there's no pads on this.
Hopefully... Oh, these are the really bad.
Let's see if they work.
Check, 1, 2, check. Oh, that's good. Yeah.
Chickity check.
Yeah.
Oh.
You want to hear yours?
No, I'm going to go bareback.
What? You're going to... I mean, that is so dangerous.
I feel like I can hear check you, two. And I'm just like...
Yeah, I'm going to go bareback, too. I just want to make sure I'm checked. Ooh, yeah.
Yeah, is that good? First of all, congratulations on your movie.
Thank you very much.
I saw... I was able to see 10 minutes of it because it got sent to me on a link, and I was in Oakland staying at a hotel, and the internet... connection in the hotel was so bad that I could only stream the movie. Right. So it kept stopping
internet
every few seconds.
We've just been on the road. Internet connections at hotels have become embarrassingly bad.
So, but you can't stream like a 4-minute
video.
No,
you can't do anything. I want to start naming these hotels. The internet Intercontinental in Austin was
a
joke.
A nightmare.
They're charging you $14 a day.
Yep.
For internet connection. And it's like a dial-up. It's the worst.
It's so bad.
It's
and
highway robbery.
Not only is the connection slow, but then it gets even slower if the hotel is full and everyone's using it.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, I guess I take that stuff for granted, but I think it's not that expensive to get high-speed internet these days.
Yeah.
I was just at Harrah's in Vegas, and I had to, like, leave my hotel room, go to, like, where the elevator bay was just to get a signal, and they still charged me $13.
It's so hard for us in this country, you guys.
Seriously.
It's so hard.
But we have a big movie coming out. What? Why did you need to get on the internet? Like, we had to get on to, you know, keep in touch. And
I actually
check.
Had to get on the internet because it was CES and I was writing scripts.
Aim that at your face. Matt was trying to see when Dave Matthews was coming anywhere into greater California area.
Tour.
So I saw 10 minutes of the movie and I go, you know what? When I get home, I'll watch it. And then Monday, I guess the link expired.
Oh,
and
no.
You can't, they gave me the link for 4 days and then link expired. So the first 10 minutes I saw were great.
Let's assume there's a portion of you listeners that have seen it.
Yes, I'm sure that
we could describe the rest of the movie.
Could you just do that in detail?
Just, like, go through all the bits.
I love seeing, there are many cameos I love seeing. Can I spoil some of them or do you not want me to spoil them?
They're all.
First of all, Jeff Goldblum, Robert Loggia, fucking William Atherton.
We brought him back.
How did you?
He was in Holding.
These guys, we're showing it tomorrow in L.A., like our big L.A. premiere, and Atherton and Loggia and their respective wives are coming. And I can't wait.
Oh, my God. That's awesome.
I just want to be in the same room as Robert Loggia watching his performance and seeing what he thinks about it.
Well, what's weird about it is Robert Loggia, in my lifetime, has always seemed like an old guy.
Yeah. You're right.
He's just a little, his hair is a little bit wider than before, but he still has that thing.
It's like the Carol Channing rule. Like, she should be dead.
Right.
She's always been an old lady.
Old premature.
Always been an old lady. Always been an old lady. And Robert Loggia totally has that.
Yeah, but we were kind of chatting with him right before his take, and we're like, you know, we really want you to go for it. And he's like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And we're like, oh, he's probably not going to give it to, you know, he's going to give us like 10%. And as soon as we hit action, he's like, yeah, yeah, like all this energy came from him. And it seems like he's having a good time.
I love the idea that there are actors like that that are aware of what their character is. I feel like him and Arlie Ermey, who was always the sergeant,
uh-huh.
is like they know they know what they're doing.
Yeah, they know why they've been brought on. It's very much like a trade.
Yeah.
Like I know what you need. You need it. You need the thing. Okay. Here you go.
And you know what's interesting is Atherton and Loggia, they didn't, sometimes these guys try to interject some of their own comedy into it.
Yeah.
Which is never good. You know, we're always like, we want you to be this scary, slimy, creepy guy. And they knew what to do and they just nailed it.
Oh, that's good. Amazing.
We had, what was his name from LA Law?
Corbin Burnson
awesome show. Corbin Burnson was on, and we were doing this. This sketch that was this. He was a lawyer, and we got him to do this. We got him to be like a lawyer on TV, like pitch. You know, like if you suffer from this condition, call this my law firm.
Yeah,
diarrheabetes.
It was diarrheabetes that people were suffering from. So call my law firm, and I gave him this tag at the end that was like, if I'm not home, leave a message with my son, and I'll call you back. And it was like a joke that he was. It was just his home that you were calling.
Right.
And then he goes, oh, maybe I'll say, if I'm not home, leave a message with the Mexican maid. And if you don't speak English, I don't know what you're going to do or something. And we're like, well, try that.
Yeah.
Let's definitely try that. And then, but he knew right away. He's like, you're not going to use that.
Yeah.
All right. But then, you know, it's funny. He got, I read this recently that he was a spokesman for some kind of actual real lawyers association.
Oh.
And got sued because of that sketch.
Oh,
because he was defaming the idea of what of a lawyer.
Oh my God.
He played a comedy lawyer and that was not cool.
It's all nope. up on the web somewhere if you type in Corbin Burnson and our show and diarrhea and
Did you get sued by the Diarrhea Council of America?
Yeah.
It's not cool.
No.
But by all rights then they could sue LA Law because he was a despicable lawyer on sure. that show.
Yeah. That got the job done.
Yeah.
I can't speak about it in detail because I don't remember the story, but some of it's true.
You guys have, at least from my estimation, have completely designed a subgenre of comedy that is uniquely Tim and Eric. And I feel like people try to mimic that, and I see a lot of it. But how do you define what it is that you do? It's so specific. And it's such a strong point of view. Do you even think about it in those terms, or do you just, when you're writing, do you just try to make each other laugh?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's simple as making each other laugh. We're never like, this needs to be a Tim and Eric-y bit.
Right.
You know, like, it's just when we met each other in college, we just had this like set of sensibilities that we kind of just agreed on. And it's sort of, our videos sort of came out of that. Like shared love for certain things, you know, and we have just things we like to make fun of and things that we like to like spoof, and that's just how it's been forever.
Yeah, I mean, it's simplification, but you know, the Three Stooges generally work within the realm and constraints of the Three Stooges style right. sensibility. but yeah, I mean, it comes down to we've also worked with the same people for a long time. We have in terms of editors and other producers and such, so. Yeah, we've created this sort of language of that we're comfortable with, and at the same time we keep trying to change it up and do more with it, and not just keep doing the same thing all the time.
When did you realize that you guys could actually have a live show business? Did you throw pizza on the audience?
Well, perhaps, I'm not sure. I mean, we did a bit about we were Papa John. It was a whole Papa John's promotional thing that we were. You know, they didn't ask us to do that. We just did a bit where we were singing about Papa John's, and then we had pizza and we threw it in the audience. It was never Papa John's pizza, though. It was always whatever the club could get a hold of at the last minute.
Papa John looks too young to be a
man,
Papa John.
Papa John?
Yes. He should be Robert Loggia.
Right.
Papa John should be
a lot of work done.
A weird pizza czar.
He's probably never had that pizza, because that would make you look your age.
No, he looks like... He looks like maybe he's had a little work done.
I don't think I've ever seen him.
You haven't seen the commercials?
He's a real guy. Yeah. Oh yeah,
he's a real guy.
Like he's now that Domino's has tried to introduce their guy. Like there's a guy. There's a Domino's guy now.
Is it the Noid? I wish they'd bring him back. It's not the Noid anymore.
No, they're no longer avoiding the Noid.
Did you see the commercial where the Pizza Hut or Domino's is talking about how this one guy at one of their stores came up with the garlic knots?
Yeah,
it's the best. This guy is like this guy's from you know Topeka, Ohio, right? And he's like, I just had this idea. I'd take these little balls of dough and put garlic and Parmesan on them and serve them as these, you know, twisty knots or something.
Yeah.
Something that we've had in every Italian restaurant, right? Every pizzeria. And then the owner's like, see, this is what we do. We give our franchises the ability to explore other options of food.
So they have that part in the commercial where his coworker says, he should be the CEO. And they cut back and he's like, No, I don't think so.
Do you like doing commercial work?
It's okay. It's not really what we would aspire to do.
I would imagine it's just too lucrative to pass it up. And they're like, hey, we're going to let you do whatever you want to do. Here's a pile of money. It's probably hard to be like, no.
It's not exactly do whatever you want to do, but it's, you know, we know how to direct.
Yeah.
We're directors. So it's...
Yeah, when we can make it into something that is... good for us, like the Absolute Vodka thing.
Exactly. That's like, great.
It's sort of
was just an opportunity. It was like having a benefactor that is just here's money, do whatever you want to do, just try to mention our product. So that when that's the case, yeah, it's pretty easy to just do that.
Were they cool with those spots, or did they understand? I mean, because it got a fuckload of attention.
Technically, they were not cool. That I mean, I think they loved it, but we broke every rule in the advertising alcohol handbook, which there is there's a list of like, you know, you can't show excessive drinking, you can't show violence, you can't, you know, there's a bunch of other ones that we just went literally broke all of those rules. Didn't mean to, but just in you know, there's a shot of Zach just guzzling vodka, right?
And just getting like very angry.
Immediately after the drinking of the vodka. Like, they're
like, ah. Yeah. They couldn't put it, so they didn't put it on their website, but they're like, you can put it out just on your YouTube, and we did, and it was sort of like this underground ad campaign that they did.
Yeah. And that's probably when they go, publicly, we can't say that this is awesome, but yeah, thank you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It was good for them.
Is it hard for you guys? I mean, like, I would imagine because of what you do is so specific, when people come in and try to tell you how to do that, is there a lot of pushback with, like, look, you just have to trust that we know how to convey the message in the way that we do it. Can you back off?
Yeah.
Yes, usually, you know, specifically with this movie, they looked at it and were like, well, we don't even understand the script. So, you know, just, like, do your thing, you know. It's usually, luckily, we've had that experience with Adult Swim and on our HBO Funny or Die short and with the movie, that they're sort of like, we don't even know how to comment on this, so just go for it. And that's sort of how it's been for a while, which is awesome.
I mean, you would hope that when people hire you, they know what they're hiring. It's like, you've seen our other stuff,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. I don't think we've ever really been in a serious position where we were brought on to do something where people didn't understand what we were about. So that, therefore, we don't get offered to do a lot of things, you know, because most people probably don't want that. But some, when they do, they're coming to us and they expect to kind of let us go and do what we do.
But I think when you get popular, then there are certain people who are like, Timmy and Eric are popular. Yeah. Let's get them in. And then you're like, what the fuck did we make? You're like, right. But you hired us.
I mean, I think it happens sometimes in the commercial world where after we've delivered something and we said what we thought, then they go off and try to sculpt it back into something that makes sense to the world.
Yeah.
And by that point, we've moved on and don't really have any emotional investment in it. So it's not that big a deal.
Do you feel like, just because, you know, so much of what you guys do is a lot of fucking around and surprising people with weird turns.
Yeah.
Do you feel like you get leeway sometimes where people see jokes that weren't necessarily there because, you know, like people are just expecting sort of weird stuff to happen?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, there's definitely a lot of like super somewhat highly intellectual interpretation of what we do. And some of it, you know, believe it or not, you know, but there's a lot of people that have written like college essays on our work and stuff.
Just reading too much into it.
Maybe, yeah. I mean,
Forbes was not gonna say comment on police force.
Yeah, exactly. Nice reference.
But to you guys, is there any of that there, or is it just?
Sure. I mean, yeah, sometimes there's, I mean, I think it's just sort of implicit in our outlook and view of the world.
Yeah,
that we're very distrustful and critical of it, so it comes into our work all the time.
And you can sort of see our view of Hollywood, like in our movie, in the opening title sequences, and kind of making fun of the production slates. And
yeah, I love the amount of time that directed.
Yes,
it was like me and my girlfriend were just like the last. Like, we just kept on laughing harder and harder.
That's great.
Yeah, the amount of time.
Director's cut. The only difference will be that we'll be up there the entire film.
Constant lower third.
Yeah. Somebody in one of the Q&A's we did in San Francisco asked, like, is there going to be a director's cut of this movie? And we're like, that was the director's cut of the movie. Yeah. I mean, nobody came in and tinkered with it. It was like, we made it and it came out. That
you
was
should
it.
Do a studio cut then.
Yeah, exactly.
Like what someone else would
watch.
Yeah. That's crazy.
That's pretty funny.
Studio cut.
But I think that's kind of inspiring to your fans, who I assume a lot of are creators.
Sure.
Like people, you know, people who appreciate comedy, people who want to create their own thing. And they see you as this entity who, look, these guys started making a thing that was entirely their vision.
Yeah.
They stuck with it. They pretty much only do the stuff that they want to do the way that they want to do it. And
right.
I feel like, you know, that's happening more and more now.
We're like the Velvet Underground of comedy.
I mean,
where everybody
kind of.
That likes us goes off and starts their own thing, right?
Yeah, but honestly, that.
Nina.
The what?
Who's your Nina?
Nina.
Oh, yeah.
Nico.
I mean, Nico. Sorry.
Wow.
Nina.
That's, what the hell?
How am I dreaming?
I mean, that's
Nina.
Weird.
Let's say you were making a Hirschfeld reference.
Yes.
Because he puts Nina in all of his line drawings. Saved! Mm-hmm. Not really.
What were you going to say then?
Well, I was just going to say that,
I wish I could report to you that a lot of greatness has sprung from that theory, but I haven't seen so much of that.
Do people send you stuff all the time? Like, oh, you guys are going to fucking love this. Yeah. Like, why would you think I would like this?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'm sure everyone here has that experience of that. There's not a lot. It's a special thing to have a unique voice.
Yeah.
And you don't see it all the time. You don't see it all the time.
Did you want to sort of be in front of the camera, or did you just want to be writers? Like, what was your plan?
I mean, I think in our early videos in college, just because we made it ourselves, we kind of put ourselves in front. I think we were both kind of doing that in high school and through different videos and acting and stuff like that.
Yeah, I think there was that period in college that where we both, I know I did at least, suffered from like the delusion that you had to be a little more serious, like you had to be a little more serious, and films needed to be serious. And comedy at that time in the early 90s wasn't cool at all. It wasn't like, there was nothing interesting happening in comedy. It was like very much connected to stand up.
Yeah.
No offense to stand up, but just, you know, Richard Jenny and the blazer and the brick wall. You know, that's what comedy with a capital C was in our minds. And film was considered something that needed to be taken seriously, and maybe in our hearts or back deep in our minds, that's what we wanted to do. But for a period there, it was like, no, you should be making serious movies.
Yeah. Well, especially then, because what do you do in the early 90s? What do you do with comedy shorts?
Yeah, exactly.
There's no outlet for them.
No YouTube or Fandom.
You can just make them and go, look at this thing we made.
Right.
That's what we did. We made these videos and we just would have screenings with our friends, you know, and that's sort of, we just like that. I mean,
yeah.
And it was our friends' feedback saying these are kind of good that led us to make more and, you know, and enter them in a couple film festivals and stuff like that.
I remember even when I was starting doing comedy in L.A., like a bunch of comics were at an open mic. And I said, hey, let's like, we should make like some videos. And BJ was just like, well, where would we show them? I was like, hey, set up a projector. I know a guy that has a projector, and then we'll get a sheet. And they're like, no, this sounds like too much work.
Yeah.
And
analog
and
YouTube
figured that out early. Dan Harmon and Rob Schraub, we were like huge fans of Heat Vision and Jack when right after college, this was a few, you know, jumping ahead a few years. That was like one of those videotapes that kind of got passed around and people were obsessing about. And then, you know, they started doing sort of these movie nights, screening shorts, and
yeah,
we connected in with them pretty quickly.
Do you think that's a good place to write from, is sort of writing in kind of a superlative tone, especially with like Heat Vision and Jack, where Dan said, we tried to write the worst thing we could think of, or we tried to, you know, like, or sometimes when people get stuck writing, they'll go, let's just try to write the dumbest, hackiest thing we can think of, and then it'll take form because we're, you know, sort of passionate about this approach.
Yeah, it's easy. It's nice to have a grounding to your stuff. So some of our earliest stuff was like a parody of a TV show. And, you know, it's easy to think about how that would be shot.
Yeah.
And it's just, at least it's a starting point. And then you can hopefully not just do a straight parody of something. But
is all of the, do you think that, because now it's, we were certainly alive when there was not comedy everywhere available, right, like in terms of the internet. Is now a good time to be starting, or is it like, there's too much noise?
I don't know. I mean, there's a couple of our friends are blowing our minds with new stuff, but I think it's because of the internet, it's harder to A, stick out, and A, to have some kind of new view of it.
Or, right.
You know, a new technique. Because you've seen so much, you're so oversaturated. You know, when Tim and I started, we would collect videotapes of all like the cable access stuff through Canada.
Oh, that's cool.
And that's what sort of turned us on to some different ways of visual aesthetics, you know. But now it's, you know, everyone's seen every YouTube clip from that era. And
right.
I think it's hard to kind of have, I think it's harder to have a unique kind of visual style or opinion on some.
I mean, I said this recently that I think we're ushering in our own destruction of our aesthetic.
Right.
Because at some point it's going to become very ordinary and plain to do things in a lo-fi way and sort of reference that 80s, 90s style. Because we've done it so much and other people now are doing it so much. So at some point we're going to have to move on from that, but I'm sure we will, and we'll find other things to do. And we already kind of have. I mean, the movie doesn't have quite as much of that. Our short films we did for HBO, The Terrys and Father and Son, were really kind of not. They were pretty straightforward stories, you know, with comedy, funny characters. So it's weird.
I wonder if I feel like so much of our culture now is either paying homage or trying to mash up older culture that I don't know what defines our present day pop culture, because it's so defined by everything that happened before. Like, what's new that we're making as a culture?
Well, yeah, I can't connect to anything. Like, if I watched the Grammys a couple weeks ago, I couldn't connect to anything except the stuff from my parents' generation.
Right.
What's his name? Old guy saying, oh, God.
I didn't see that.
Paul McCartney?
No.
yeah, right.
Robert Loggia. That'd be amazing.
Rhinestone Cowboy.
Glenn Campbell
was like the best performer of the night.
And he probably didn't realize he was on there.
Because he has Alzheimer's.
Did you hear what he said?
Does he really?
Yeah, he has Alzheimer's.
Did you hear what he said right after he was done?
No.
He's like, where do I go now? Where do I go?
Oh, no.
Well, he remembered all those lyrics.
He did. I think at that point in his career, you just click into
it. That would be amazing if he spun that into a cover of Sweet Child of Mine.
Where do I go?
That'd be fucking amazing.
That's pretty good.
I know. It just seems like so many of the people that are popping, like that are famous now, it's because there's so much crazy, like, theatrics. And, like, Lady Gaga came out of a duck's vagina, and fucking Nicki Minaj is, like, blowing the Pope. Or, like, it just.
I thought it was amazing when she did that audience didn't stand up for an there was no standing ovation, and some other people got some, which might have been deserved or not. But after that whole big thing, there was just like, okay, yeah. Not that great.
I think people were just. I think it was that weird sort of social PC thing of like, are we allowed to enjoy this publicly and still be accepted in society?
Right.
There's so like those award shows are just so PC-ish.
Yeah,
like you can't. Do that.
That's why
I'm supposed to say.
I gotta get Billy Crystal to really shake the fucking cage.
He's getting a lot of shit for dressing up like Sammy Davis. Did he do?
I was gonna ask you. I was gonna bring this. I almost tweeted this morning, but I thought I would probably get so much shit for it. But is that considered blackface to dress up like Sammy Davis Jr.? Because I think blackface is a very specific, horrible
like
thing.
Al like Al Jolson,
with the. You know, the white lips, and you're doing a stereotype of a kind, you know, of a black person from a period of, you know, it's not like a specific person.
I hear what you're saying.
I don't know if that would be, I wouldn't consider that blackface.
He's doing a character pretty much the same way that Robert Downey Jr. did in Tropic Thunder.
Right.
And people got upset. But I think it was, you know, initially that specific kind of blackface sort of evolved into, well, it's not acceptable to do that at all.
Right. I don't want to defend Billy Crystal.
No,
ever,
no, but it's an interesting social question.
I think blackface, if you look it on Wikipedia, blackface is a very specific thing. And it's...
Yeah.
And Paul Scheer?
He was... he was doing... I mean, to me, just because we talked about this before, I was like, I remember him, he used to do Sammy Davis Jr. on SNL all the time. Yeah. So to me, that wasn't
Muhammad Ali, too.
Right? Yeah, that wasn't a crazy... That was just part of what his character repertoire was. Right. So that's why I was asking, did he do any other characters like that on the show, or was it just Sammy?
No, that was the only one, I think, that, as far as I can remember, that was like the only real celebrity character thing he did.
His Aunt Jemima was in bed.
No, I thought that was not... That probably wasn't the best plan of... But I think there's definitely a difference between I am being racist and making fun of black people to this is a character of Sammy Davis Jr. that I do.
What it felt like was that it was just he was pulling out for no reason was there a Sammy Davis Jr. in the car with Justin Bieber. It was basically just a reference to himself, which is
because I got it. I can do an impression of
him. Yeah, that's all it was. It had nothing to do with anything, and it was just that's what threw me off.
I think what they were trying to do with him on the Oscars is, hey, look, guys, remember when everyone said the show was great? And here's this guy that you remember from this era, and he did these characters then, and we're just reminding you that this is who
he
was.
The show wasn't great.
It's not like he's, Yeah, but I mean, ultimately, yes. But that's from the Oscars' point of view. That's what I think. But that's what they were saying.
Listen, guys, you have Tim and Eric on the show. Let's move off the Oscars.
Wow, how guys, did you already read the comments of this episode?
How would you guys host the Oscars?
Well, we've been asked by our fans.
Unfortunately, none of them work for the Academy. Yeah. Do you like the live performance aspect? Because you guys have really evolved into a thing where people, an experience that people can go see. Do you like performing live, or is it?
Yeah, we like it. It's fun. It's, you know, touring is like rough. Our shows are pretty intense, like 6 costume changes and like prosthetics and explosions and stuff. So it's like a big show, but I think it stems back from early on in high school and early college playing in bands and kind of liking that experience.
You were in Ink and Dagger.
I was, yes. I was in a couple bands. And there's nothing like, you know, that live experience of getting laughs and screams. You know, when you make TV, it's pretty much me and my cats watch experiencing it, you know, when it's first out there. It's nice to be in a big group.
Well, and you guys too, your shows are so energetic. I think, what was it? Was it Vancouver we did a few years ago?
Mm-hmm.
And just watching you do like a 12-minute set.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my God, how do those guys do that? Because
we're not in shape either. So
there was a lot, it was the diarrhea
a lot
song.
Of marching. Yeah.
Yeah, there was a lot of marching. And then
we know two dance steps, you know, like the march and then like the twirl around and in place.
What was it? Remember, it was 2 years ago in Comic Con when you guys did the Blues Brothers thing at the House
of
Blues?
Yeah, we did the Blues Brothers. We were the new Blues Brothers. And it was, who was it sponsored by?
Terminex.
Oh, that was the show Patton did at House of Blues. Yeah, yes, yeah. Yes, I was there.
Yeah, and we sprayed the audience down with bug spray. just water, folks. But
do you like performing for people? I mean, obviously, this might be a fucking ridiculous question to ask, but obviously, it's fun to perform for your fans because they know what they're coming to see. But is there any part of you that likes performing for people who have no idea what's happening?
Not really. I mean, we did this benefit show for Will Ferrell's thing that he does every year, and it was at the Nokia Center. It was like, I don't know, 5,000 people there, and we did diarrhea. We did this, like, which is a 10-minute, nauseating song, just banging you over the head with this song, just where we only repeat the word diarrhea, and like the mayor was in the audience and the sheriff. Yeah. And it was like, because it was like this big high ticket item, you know, it was like this big official thing. And
gala.
Yeah, gala. And it was, we ran through the aisles and like these people looked like, don't you fucking touch me. Like,
really?
Don't you get near me.
I saw a guy grab his wife and pull her close for safety.
Thank God I saved you.
From what?
So that's like a 7-minute song, and then we get back on stage, and then the end of the bit is that we accept an award as the best sketch of the night. And like Will Ferrell brings out these big trophies, and we give these long speeches thanking each other. The audience is like, you could tell the audience didn't like that experience at all. And then for us to sort of tag on this, you know, award ceremony for it it didn't feel great. What felt great was like the other comics on the side were all like laughing and clapping and stuff.
Well, so, I remember when Neil Hamburger came to town, he hated doing real comedy shows.
Yeah.
He just didn't like people responding to the jokes like they were funny.
Right.
Yeah. I remember because he just came up doing like, you know, bowling alleys unannounced and stuff.
Right.
Like that. I remember he was always very like, I don't like it when they get it.
Yeah, I can appreciate that for his act, but for us, it feels better to have a nice, warm reception.
Yeah.
You know.
I read a review of Neil Hamburger opened for Tenacious D a couple years ago, and they reviewed him as if he were an actual comic. Like,
well, that's one of the greatest albums of all time. I think it's a hot, I always get this wrong, Hot February Night, or it's Neil Hamburger's set from doing Madison Square Garden, opening up for Tenacious D, and the whole audience turns against him Madison Square Garden.
That's right.
And he doesn't let up. He does, and he just destroys. And the audience comes back onto his side, but he keeps saying, like, he keeps pretending to introduce Tenacious D, and then doesn't. It's the greatest thing. Everybody buy it.
Yeah, I had some friends who were for Tenacious D, and they were super excited about it at first, and then when they started doing the shows, people did not want to see anyone other than Tenacious D.
Yeah.
And it was fucking rough.
Yeah.
And you think of I always think of Tenacious D fans like they're cool comedy fans. And these were like aggressive, you know, like.
I noticed that too.
Dudes.
Yeah.
Yeah, back in the day, when we were in Philly, I had this band that opened up for Stella at the Trocadero.
Oh, wow.
So they're, you know, comedy, and we were like this weird kind of groove jazz thing. and pretty much we booked it so Tim and I could give our DVDs to, you know, David Wayne and Ian Black and stuff. So we played this.
David Wayne, Mike Liam Black, and stuff.
I never saw all
that. And the rest.
I did that on, not to sidetrack, but I was... never mind.
Seems like a whole side.
No,
seems
like a side.
I tweeted, like, I just showed my girlfriend the Stella shorts, and I was like, this still holds up as the best, like, internet shorts I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And I just added Ian Black and David Wayne. And my soul was like, you couldn't include me? It's like, there's a couple more words here. I don't know why I still don't think of him. He's great in that. I love
Turkey Hutton is still just like one of the, or is it Turkey Day? It's like the first one. Yeah, but that's I still think about it. It's like a sketch that I go back to in my head a lot.
It's good.
What?
The Stella Shorts DVD, I have it, and it's cracking.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
But so your band was playing?
So we're playing, and in between every song, there's like very light applause, and then, Stella! Yeah. But at the end of the show, you know, Tim and I went back. We did this horrible thing that people do to us all the time. It's like jam a DVD in your face, but... they were on tour and they watched it and they were going to watch it to make fun of it. and we got emails from those guys being like, what is this? This is kind of good.
Oh, that's great.
It was awesome. Yeah, it was really
good. Odenkirk had already snapped us up by then though. So
under the Odenkirk wing.
Yeah. You guys sent it to him and like sent along an invoice, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Sent two headshots. We charged them for the headshots, charged them for the signature, and charged them for the shipping.
Shipping.
$150, I think, to get an unsolicited package.
So Philly is where you guys grew up? Is that where you went to college? Or is that where you lived?
Yeah, we met at Temple University.
I really like Philly a lot. We're going to be there in like a month or two at the Trocadero. And it's a really nice town.
Yeah.
And you just don't really feel like any other... There's so few parts of the country where you feel like, oh, yeah, this is the roots of the country I live in.
Right.
Are right here in this city.
Liberty Bell.
Liberty Bell.
What do you guys do? You guys do a stand-up show? Like, that's you and you and other...
We all do stand-up, and then we record a podcast.
Oh, you
do. Like, the first half of the show is stand-up, and the second half of the show is podcast, and we take questions
from
people.
Who are you going to have in Philly as your guest?
I don't know if... it depends on who's around.
Who's around.
Yeah. Or who's willing to come from New York, or if someone happens to be in Philly performing that they wouldn't mind popping on the show. Some shows we have guests and some it's just not possible.
All right.
But
I'm just asking.
If you're in Philly.
Yeah, we'll let you know.
Actually, there's a guy who does this thing called Skeletor Karaoke.
Uh-huh.
And it's attached to the Trocadero. There's a little bar attached to the Troc. And he hosts a karaoke night like once a month in full Skeletor costume. And he skeletorizes songs that he sings
at the end of the night.
It smells great. and so he sings songs, but then he sings them from the point of view of Skeletor.
Oh.
And it's pretty great. So maybe he'll be a guest.
Cool.
I don't know.
I hope so.
You guys going to be in Philly?
Just send us a JPEG.
How about an animated GIF? You want to animate a GIF?
Send us an Evite.
Can you make us the sunglasses come down on it?
I can make the sunglasses come down on it. And then
you guys will fly us out first class, put us up at the Ritz in Philly. Think about it.
It's shockingly expensive to get a hotel in Philly, by the way.
Is it?
We're looking at hotels. It's like $600 a night at the Sheraton.
Really?
Really?
Here's what you do. Radisson on Locust.
This is a big plug here.
The 13th is my favorite one. We were just there. We stayed at the Sofitel, which is a shit place.
Okay.
Pipe in the smell of lilies.
Like, yes.
It's just like one of those fake fancy places.
Mm-hmm.
But I always stay at the Radisson. It's really cheap right by the Rittenhouse Square Park. You'll love it.
Okay.
Seriously.
I will. Are you guys, you're just doing theaters now, right? You don't have to do clubs anymore. You guys sell out, like you sell a lot of tickets on the road.
I mean, we still try to do rock clubs over theaters because our shows are usually very musical.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we like people like dancing and singing along and stuff like that.
Also, some theaters are shockingly expensive when you're like, we want to get a screen. And like, yeah, it's $1,000. What?
Yeah, yeah. We try to agree with you whenever we can at the same time.
We're trying to do Australia this year for the first time.
For the comedy festival or just on your own tour?
I think we're going to link up with one of the festivals and then kind of do our own thing.
That's awesome.
But we've never been down there, and it seems like a lot of people...
I do a one-man Crocodile Dundee show.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's very popular in the States.
Is That's Not a Knife? Is that what it's called?
Yeah, that's what it's called. It's funny. Called That's Not Enough. You pronounce it, That's Not Enough.
Yeah. He's on stage, he goes, That's Enough, and the crowd is supposed to respond.
That's not enough. Eric introduces me and then moderates a Q&A at the end. So it's a sort of a Tim and Eric thing.
I would actually watch the shit out of that.
Introduction.
I would actually watch the shit out of that.
That'd be so funny.
Is a fucking great idea.
Eric did like a 25-minute introduction on it about the experience of seeing it for the first time and a lot of background. And then my one-man show is only 15 minutes long. Then there's a long Q&A afterwards.
That's really good. It's like a full hour.
Oh, please do that. Yeah. You, I mean, you have the...
Just coming out in that outfit with the hat and the vest and everything. Just lines from the movie.
That just drops out constantly.
Yeah, exactly.
It's there sometimes.
If someone invites you to do a comedy festival and you feel like, I don't want to do the stuff we've been doing, just fucking do that. Even if you only do it one time.
It would be great.
One time. Yeah, that would be legendary.
Well, now that when this goes out, everyone's going to be requesting it.
When's that one man Crocodile Dundee show? Yeah. Okay, well, we were just kind of riffing around.
I'll tell you this because we never could do it. We wanted to do a sketch on Awesome Show called Hogan's Heroes, and it was Paul Hogan's sandwich shop. but we couldn't get him to do it. He's like out of the business now.
Oh.
But it was such a good idea, right?
That is a fantastic idea. I guess that's true. That sort of hinges on actually getting Paul Hogan.
Yeah, yeah.
You can't just pretend to be an Australian guy.
Can't really do an impersonator.
No.
There's no
like
real...
evading some tax thing? Isn't that what he's
that
doing?
That could be.
I'm pretty sure that's...
Is he?
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's like when they shot Jaws and Quint had to not be on shore for too long because the feds wanted him for tax evasion.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Jaw was like dishing his taxes. Good time.
Oi, oi, oi.
Who were you guys influenced by the most when you were growing up? Was it comedy or was it more music or what did you consume?
Was it Zappa?
For me,
Zappa. Zappa stinks, man.
I'm not a Zappa guy.
If
really?
You listen to that stuff, I think it's poor.
No, I love Frank.
Really?
Yeah, I do.
I read his autobiography and I love his opinions about things and stuff, but I can't listen to any of that music.
Really? I love
like a million records. There's just so many records.
He has a ton. But I loved that it just felt like it was a sort of reaction or antithesis or just fucking around with everything else that was going on at the time.
Yeah, I'll go back. I like to try to explore things that I dismissed and see if I was wrong. So maybe I'm wrong.
The reverse side of that is when you watch stuff again that when you were younger, you're like, this is the greatest thing ever. Yeah. And then you watch and you're like, what?
Yeah.
What? This is what influenced me?
Yeah.
No.
Try watching Spaceballs. It doesn't hold up so much.
Try watching Brewster's Millions.
Yeah.
This movie's the best comedy ever.
Right.
What happened? What just happened?
Yeah, in high school, I was all the hippies and artsy people listened to Frank Zappa, and all like the jocks listened to Led Zeppelin, and I was like anti both of those people.
So right.
I dismissed both bands.
Yeah.
And then in college, I was like, holy shit, Led Zeppelin? What the fuck was wrong with me?
Yeah.
Amazing. And then I checked out Zappa, and I was like, I just can't get on board on that.
Captain
guy.
Beefheart was good, and that wasn't that.
I like Captain Beefheart.
Yeah, Captain Beefheart was good.
Comedy-wise, though, we always get this question, you know, no offense to you, but fair question. It's hard because some of it is so obvious and pedestrian and just like, well, that's what everybody watched. Because what else was there to watch? You know, watch Saturday Night Live, Kids in the Hall, SCTV. Mr. Show later on.
Yeah, I mean, for me, comedy was something it was a hobby you did on the side, you know. I always wanted to be a filmmaker and a musician. I was in bands, and it wasn't until I met Tim, and then we started making stuff. And then even till years after that, we were like, we might be able to put something together that's, you know, that we could get a couple bucks for.
Yeah.
I was remembering, because I always forget stuff, and I think about it later, and I remember now the first Naked Gun movie was at an age, I don't know, I was like 10 or 11 or something, where that was the funniest thing I remember seeing that in the theater and screaming and almost peeing my pants. It was the funniest. And like more than a lot of other people in the theater too, you know, so that was, and that became you know, obsessive about it a little bit. And so as that's not, that probably doesn't hold up very well, but that was really, really what I liked, you know?
I feel like that one might hold up pretty well. I think when you start getting into like 33 and a third,
yeah,
then it's like, okay.
Then yeah, it just becomes like you can appreciate
Dracula Dead and loving it.
Exactly.
I still go back to that sometimes.
Really?
Dracula Dead and loving it? Really?
I don't know why. I'll go back and be like, the last part.
And then we also got, I remember getting into like bad stuff early on as being funny. Like, well, you know, the Mystery Science Theater was obviously all about the bad. And watching that, we'd rent those Dolomite movies, you know?
Right.
Dolomite, and be like in hysterics about the boom in the shot.
Like where everything was just like, really one take? Or that was the best take? That no quality control?
Yeah exactly.
They're like, fuck it. We just got to make this movie as fast as possible.
Yeah.
There's some lost tapes of Tim and I in college when we used to drink 40s. And we used to take our shirts off and do these weird short films. And I've been trying to get a hold of these because I think it could be gold.
Where did you?
We lived together in a, after college, we lived together with another roommate. We had like it was a three bedroom, but the one bedroom was this tiny closet. And you had to be like a special kind of weird man to live there.
Yes. You had to be in really bad, bad financial shape to take that apartment.
And that guy was just kind of our shit boy. And he would just be hanging out, filming us, doing stuff like late at night.
What's he now?
Now he's
a writer in Portland, right?
Yeah, Eric Bader, bearded man.
Do you think there's too much emphasis now with comedy on like? I feel like sometimes people, especially with kind of internet culture. They like stuff just because it's so bad. Is that is that enough of a reason to be entertained by it? Like, I feel like there's so much YouTube culture that's just like, oh, this thing has 50 million views because it's the worst thing that anyone's, you know. Is there too much of an ironic appreciation of entertainment?
I mean, maybe. I mean, I think, like, you know, the videos that we collected early in college, like TV Carnage.
Yeah.
And we had a network of people that would share tapes of bad stuff. But there's always this comedic edge to it that makes, you know, I feel like we didn't like stuff just because it was terrible, you know. There had to be something kind of...
There had to be like a vulnerability there, or there had to be like the idea of there's an attempt to make something good.
Yeah.
And watching that failure happening is like, I mean, it sounds base, but it's like the guy slipping on a banana peel. It's the same sort of idea. It's like you're watching people fail. You're watching people... you know, screw up. And that's like America's Funniest Home Videos.
Or sure.
You know, it's the same line of psychology that makes you enjoy seeing bad stuff, I think.
But is it frustrating as creators sometimes when you're trying to make things that are good? And then it's like, oh, that thing that someone made that was purposely bad is, you know.
I mean, there's definitely a skill to making things bad.
Right.
You know, a lot of people look at our stuff and like, oh, you're just like doing bad jump cuts and, you know, but it's actually, we really like are nitpicky about how everything looks, you know, and there's like, our editors are geniuses for kind of getting to that real bad level, you know, and then when you...
Sometimes there's bad stuff that's just bad and it's boring and it's not interesting and, you know... I tried to watch Jack and Jill over the weekend, and that was so bad, and it wasn't funny that it was bad. It wasn't something fun to goof on. It was just sad and depressing.
Yeah.
So turned it off.
I had the feeling about that. It was on the hotel when I was in the hotel over the weekend. I'm like, oh, it's on the thing. Maybe this will be a fun. And then the more I looked at the poster, I was like, this is not going to be a fun bad watch.
But like, a ton of our friends went opening night, like Rosenstein and all those guys, Molinar. They all go and they all like love the fact that they're going to go see this bad movie. And I like that. It's more of a communal like night out thing. But I don't know. I don't know if I could stomach paying the money for
that. There's a difference between, I think, just making something that's bad. And what I think you guys do is when there's a bigger thing that you're saying when you're making fun of something. There's like a bigger, there's more of a satire involved than just like, oh, we're just going to make a bad thing.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, I think there's, we try to hit on a couple different layers or levels of the badness or the quality or the aesthetic of the piece is generally just to set the piece in something,
yeah.
You know, is to create an environment or a world. And then hopefully it's not just going to be that. There'll be a joke. And an idea and a character and things that all go in that world.
Do you think you guys, do you foresee yourselves at some point doing stuff that's more serious and can you, or do you think people would always expect like, oh wait, there's something coming here? Is that weird that people are always looking at you waiting for something to happen?
Yeah, we've been doing on this press tour. A lot of journalists are like just scared. They're like, when are you guys going to freak out or fuck with me? But no, we made over last summer, we made a serious movie called The Comedy that a guy, Rick Alverson, directed and Tim Starr's in, and I'm a supporting actor. And it's not a comedy. It's a dramatic, serious, fucked up movie.
I don't know. If we continue to kind of do the same thing, we'll become irrelevant to ourselves and to our audience. So yeah, there has to be some evolution. I mean, I don't know. I think from Tom Goes to the Mayor to here, there's been some kind of growth or evolution or something. So hopefully that'll continue and we'll keep doing stuff that interests us. And, you know, that's probably not going to be as we get older, it's probably not going to be as crazy.
Right.
You know?
Why do you think that happens? Do you think when people get older, they just get more comfortable or they just kind of lose that fire of, I got to be relevant? They just don't give a fuck anymore because your brain gets flooded with old people hormones.
I don't know. I think generally comedy is a young man's game.
Yeah.
I think generally, not all the time, but most people are funnier when they're younger. They've more things to be angry about.
Yeah, we've seen that fire go out with a lot of people.
I've seen it go out in you. Seen it go out in you, Chris.
Yep, it's dead. Yeah. I mean, right now, it's just embers.
Jonas still has it.
A little bit.
Look at that
just
guy.
Just a touch. Yeah,
smoldering.
Matt is actually a ball of rage.
That's true.
He is a tightly packed rage matrix that at any minute.
The other thing is, like, you keep, you do stuff, and then then you start crossing off things that you wanted to do. So you're, you know what I mean? It's
yeah.
Like every time you do something and it gets produced and gets released and it's out, that's now something you can't do anymore.
Right.
So you're, in some ways, maybe your options get limited, but I don't know. It forces you to keep reinventing yourself or.
Are you good about appreciating stuff? Or, I mean, just because, you know, you were Mr. Show fans or you're fans of Stella, and then all of a sudden you're working with these guys and they respect you and they love what you do. Is that, are you still able to appreciate that? Or is it just part of the, like, yeah, that's fine. We did that. Let's move on to the next thing.
I mean, no, I think we're both still fans of comedy and film and art. Like Eastbound and Down just like blew my mind the other night.
Such a good episode.
Yeah,
it's different when you meet your stars, though. You know, meeting Bob and David and then watching their stuff. Definitely something happens that you're like, God, it's not as
like mysterious.
Yeah, you know, it's I.
But I got to do this comedy show in Vancouver. Bob and David did a little reunion in Vancouver, and I did some stand up, and I was me and the other comedians were very aware that we were watching our idols on stage and that we were a part of it. And yeah, I mean, I was very aware of that and appreciative and thanked them, you know, effusively afterwards. Like this was really a neat thing to do. And, you know, of course Cross gave me shit for that, but it was great.
That is kind of an interesting idea of humanizing your idols. Cause you still want to have those people up there that you're constantly like, oh, but that's what I really want to do. But then when you get them on a very human level and you see like, no, they're people and they get insecure and they have a process and everything they do isn't gold. And
Yeah. That's why we never want to meet or work with Christopher Guest. We'll keep that as somebody that as untouchable.
There are a couple of people that I've
to be so presumptuous.
No.
Never be in that position. But.
I know exactly what you mean. There are a couple of people that I thought I had always wanted on the podcast, and the more I thought about it, I was like, you know what? Yeah. I think I would rather have them just be up there, especially because if it doesn't go well, or if I see something it bums me out. Then it's just like everything's ruined.
Exactly.
Everything's ruined.
Everything is ruined.
I was kind of toying with the idea of just ending the podcast right there.
I actually have a sushi date in 7 minutes.
What?
It's so close.
With a lady?
So close. Not with some friends. But one of my favorite sushi places is closing today.
What? Oh, wow. Which place?
Sushi Nozawa.
That's closing.
Yeah.
And today, are they?
Literally, it's last day.
All the sushi is free today because they have to get rid of it?
But we're on a search to find like our new spot.
So okay.
I made a documentary. This guy told me about a spot that's right around the corner. It couldn't be more convenient.
The one on La Brea?
Hirozen Gourmet.
I don't think I know.
It's kind of underground.
Well, now you have 6 minutes, so I don't want to keep you from the sushi date. We're at the end of the hour anyway, so this is the perfect amount of time.
Let's do some kind of wrap up. How can we wrap this up? I thought it was a good conversation.
I really enjoyed it.
Is it generally?
I don't listen to podcasts very much. To be honest with you, is this generally the tone of your podcast? Or is it a little bigger? And hey, people are
no. I always kind of follow whoever the guest is. Sometimes people feel like being more energetic. Sometimes we just have a more serious conversation. Right. But I never like to try to force people into any kind of energy.
It's not going
to
stick out as some kind of green thumb. Green thumb?
No.
I've done that before.
Everyone's going to think of it as just a kind of a gardening thing.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. He's really good at gardening. No. This is exactly what it should be.
It is what it is.
Because I've never actually had a chance to sit down and talk to you guys at length about anything. And I feel like I see you at shows sometimes, but
I'll be honest with you. I enjoyed it.
I enjoyed it too. I'm going to be completely honest since we're all being honest, I'm going to say I really enjoyed it too.
We'll hold hands right now.
But I do want to. I want to get that link renewed so I can watch the rest of the movie because I got 10 minutes into it and I'm like, I want to fucking. It was like it got up to the scene.
Give you $10 if you.
$9.99. Do you have a penny for change?
Oh, I was under the impression that it wasn't out yet. That's why they sent me the link. I'll just buy it.
It's on iTunes now.
Oh, well, fuck. I'll just get it on iTunes.
It'll be opening up in the theaters.
Yeah.
If you live in a town that has a good movie theater. I don't know where to find out that information, but if you go to the
internet,
timanderic.com, I'm sure you can get there.
Magnetreleasing.com will give you all the theaters.
Where is timandericsmovieplaying.com?
.google. Yeah, I'll just get it on iTunes then. But thanks for coming in, you guys. I really appreciate it. It's good to see you. And good luck with more. Are you touring more really quickly? Are you going to be on the road anytime soon?
Nothing planned.
Okay. Just go to timanderic.com. God damn it. Enjoy your burrito, everyone.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Enjoy it.
Thanks, guys.
Enjoy your burrito.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
This episode of the Nerdist Podcast is brought to you by Stamps.com. Go to Stamps.com, click on the radio microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in Nerdist for a $110 bonus offer, including a digital scale and $55 of free postage. That's Stamps.com. Enter the promo code Nerdist.